Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, it's definitely a warm welcome this morning to our program, Dare to Be Different. My name is Ismail Viava, and welcome to all of you listening to us via the Medium Wave 1548 Satellite Islam, DSTV 826, where there's also on audio streaming and on any other device that may be tuning in. And it is definitely a sizzle this morning, and temperatures are definitely going to raise. They talk about between 34 and 36, depending on which part of the area that you are in, Gauteng. And I think when I looked at some of the articles coming in, some places even up to 41 when you're going right up into Mpumalanga. So definitely we have a heat wave upon us. And this morning we've got a wonderful guest who's no stranger. She always has so much information to share with us, and that's Michelle Kudzer from Brant Miller's Nursery. Hi, good morning, Michelle.
Morning, Ismail.
Yes, like I said, sizzling temperatures are in this time of the morning, and looking at some of the weather patterns, it says El Nino to bring less rain and more heat for South Africa. So that's what they say. South Africa is likely to experience a delay in rainfall patterns this summer.
Apparently so, yes.
So while it is, we're looking and scanning the skies, and we're hoping that some of the rain comes down, even just a little bit, to dry this patch. Well, look at our lawn patches, look at our gardens, and I want you to take us through some of the things that we should be doing when the temperatures are sizzling. Now, the first thing that we understand is that if you are going to be out in your garden, you need to make lots of precautions when working the garden. First of all, to make sure that you're well hydrated, and you have something covering your neck, because many people do not understand that that's where it, you lose, and the heat is directly on you. And somebody said last week, even your feet. So, Michelle, is it all true?
Yes, no, definitely. And, of course, sunscreen is very important, and a hat as well. And, lots of people, I think, want to catch a tan while they're gardening. that's the last thing they should be doing. Now, they certainly do need to be wearing protection and sunscreen, especially in these scorching temperatures. But having said that, I just want to give people hope. The last few days, we've had clouds building up and building up. And then they disappear, and they build up again, and they build up. So at least it tells me that there is moisture in the air.
That is definitely true. That's why I say when you scan the skies and it comes around about, 2:30, then you look and you see those clouds building up, and hoping, well, it is going to rain. We had some rain, a little bit, not too much on Wednesday. I'm not sure if we had in your part of the world.
No, we weren't fortunate enough to have any yet.
So we have some line. Like you say, we're working, and why it does build up, it does is an indication that there's lots of moisture, and we may have a storm. When it comes, it may not just be rain, maybe storms, because they are predicting some parts of the country, severe storms as well. So having said all of that, Michelle, now we look in the garden, we need certain watch points, because I was talking to someone, and he said, I've been watering. When I watered in the morning, in the afternoon, it looks like I've never watered. The plants have just wilted. And what do you think we should be doing?
And that is completely true. The problem is, Ismail, if one waters in the heat of the day, you're actually wasting water and you're wasting your time, because it just tends to evaporate. So early in the morning and then in the late afternoon when it is cooler is certainly better, because then at least the water you're putting down gets to penetrate the ground. It doesn't all sort of evaporate. But what one can also do is plant in small containers, especially plants on the patio. You can actually take them and submerge them in a bucket of water, so that you then let them drain back in that bucket, and then you can use that water for the next one. And then the excess water you can then use to water your garden. So your small containers you can certainly do by soaking them. And even if you soak them once a week, it's much better than giving them a little bit every day. That's also something we all need to bear in mind, that it's better to water deeply once a week than to water a little bit all the time, because watering a little bit only encourages surface roots. It doesn't make the roots penetrate down.
Now, when you're saying, that you said early in the morning, now people would like sort of, can you ask me, what is early in the morning? Is it from 5 a.m. to about 7, 8, or is it right up to 10 a.m.? And I'm saying this before the sun really penetrates. So would it be around about 10? Would that be too late, or is that by time it's too hot already?
No, I would say by 10. If you've watered everything that you can by 10, you should be safe, because then at least it would have had a chance to go down into the soil.
And, an important thing that you've also mentioned is that you take a container, and I love that idea, because, it's multifold. So whilst the plants are getting, taking in the water, whatever is excess can then be thrown on other plants, on the bigger plants. So that's fantastic, because you're doing sort of two things. You're watering the one, and you also have the excess water which you can use to water the others.
Exactly, yes. And of course, people need to follow water wise practices, especially now in this heat wave. So not waste water and not to hose down the driveway and do all sorts of silly things like that. They waste water, you know. And what one can also do, if you have plants that are wilting, what you can do is take a watering can with a rose on the end and actually sort of sprinkle it over them to cool them down. And those that do have access to boreholes could possibly take a hose pipe, put your finger in the front and make, I always say, make rain on them just to cool them down. Because plants lose water through their leaves. So if you cool them down, then at least they won't lose as much water. But having said that, I also just want to warn people that when a plant is wilting, it does not necessarily mean that it's dry, especially in this heat. Often it's actually from heat stress that they're wilting. And what happens is people see them wilting and then they give additional water and sometimes they start rotting because you think they're wilting from drought, meantime it's actually just from heat stress.
You know, Wendy, this is a very important indicator because you talk about heat stress and, you know, we sometimes miss and, you know, interpret that. And like you said, we then something come in and we take lots of water, copious amounts of water, and we throw it onto the plant and hoping it's going to happen. And then in the meantime, the water sits at the bottom and then it rots from the root.
That's true. And you actually end up drowning the plants.
So you know, whilst you're wanting to do some good, you may be doing more harm. Now, having said all of that, you know, we're talking about watering and now large spaces, and I've seen many lawns looking rather very sad. I must say it's very sad because, you know, they haven't really come and, you know, put up their beautiful shows. By now, they should be in deep green, but there's lots of patches of brown in it. And you know, with being cautious about how to water and when to water, what are some of the things that we could do to ensure that we have a healthy lawn?
The problem is we need to all understand that lawn uses a lot of water. So, again, it depends on your resources available, whether you have water to water it or not. I never water my lawn. It's not looking nice because I believe that I need to save the trees and the big shrubs where the lawn tends to usually recover. So those that have limited water, I would say concentrate on your trees and your shrubs. And to me, the lawn is always last in the queue for the simple reason that it usually recovers after a drought. Whereas to lose a tree, I mean, it's years that you can't replace overnight. And also some of your special shrubs as well.
So you know, when you come in, I think what you've just indicated is it's a case of, you know, priorities, what you've got to do and how you can do it. And I think those are things that we need to understand.
Yes, no, definitely. You're quite right. Prioritize your watering and start with the trees, then the shrubs and your annuals. Obviously, everybody wants a bit of color, but those can be replaced easily, whereas a shrub that's been in the garden for 10 or 15 years, it's not easy to replace that. And when we talk about the lawns again, kukuyu, I've mentioned it before, really wastes water because it's a very thirsty lawn. So those that are planting new lawns, try to opt for a more water-wise lawn like something like LM, which doesn't require nearly as much water as a kukuyu lawn.
You know, just on that, I've had a question about someone who said, I've got a very small space and I don't really have space to run a lawn mower through it, but I want to plant some sort of a grass or a lawn. What would you suggest because of the limited space and, you know, not being able to take or push through a lawn mower?
And then they could consider something like the Wonder Lawn, which is a round little leaf. It grows in sun or shade. It makes a beautiful lawn. It can handle quite an amount of traffic. And a lot of people complain that their kukuyu lawn gets Wonder Lawn in it, and they consider it a weed, but it does make a beautiful lawn. You can actually use it as a lawn.
And would you plant it from seed, or could it be planted as a, could you get it, you know, ready to plant?
You do get them in trays in some of the garden centers where there's 200 little seedlings. Alternatively, you might find it in amongst the perennial six-packs, and you do get seed of it as well.
And which one would be easy? And then you said that it doesn't take as much water, and it's ornamental, and also still gives you the same greenery. So, and then how do you maintain that, Michelle?
Basically, you just need to water it, and that's it. It grows in sun or shade. It's evergreen. It really takes care of itself.
And then, how do you trim it? I mean, does it grow very high in terms of centimeters, or is it a low-growing one?
It's very low growing. It only reaches about 50 millimeters in height. So it actually gives you a lawn automatically. And as I say, it can handle quite a bit of traffic. That's now the Wonder Lawn.
And in terms of a spread, do you need lots of trays to plant into a small space, or do you need just a little bit? Or would you be, you know, self-seeding? How would you make sure that you can cover a sufficient amount of space?
They do spread like a ground cover, and they seem to take root again. So they're fairly quick, so you wouldn't need that much.
Okay, so if anyone is looking out for an alternative lawn, and that's Wonder Lawn, it may not be. And on the foot, is it as soft as a kukuyu or not as soft?
Not quite as soft, because it has a rounder leaf. It doesn't have sort of a long grass-like blade, but it looks very nice, and it is definitely a lot less maintenance.
Well, thank you for that one. I also had, you know, they had a query about, you know, small spaces, can't get the lawnmower through, should I just take out or just pave over? And I'm thinking, you know, sometimes people take drastic measures because they don't have an alternative, but now you have an alternative, so maybe that Wonder Lawn would be something for small spaces. And Pat, what about in between paving? Would Wonder Lawn do better, or would tufts of what we call, you know, the grasses, Mondo grass, and that, would that be better?
You could use the Mondo grass. The Wonder Lawn is also very nice because it's shorter. There's quite a few other ground covers. Depends on whether it's for sun or shade. If it's sun, Diamondia is a very nice ground cover, which is completely flat with a grey and green leaf with a little yellow daisy flower. In the shady areas, there's Mazus, which is completely flat, and that makes tiny little bell-shaped flowers, and that makes a very nice ground cover, as does the Creeping Jenny. That can take sun or a fair amount of shade, and you get it in a dark green as well as a lime, and the lime often just gives that extra color in between the pavers.
So you're looking for sort of multi-use, so it's a Creeping Jenny and the Wonder Lawn.
Yes, most definitely. Yes.
Thank you very much for that. What's a query I've had with regards to, you know, the Australian tree fern? Now, do you water the root or do you water the plant?
You actually water the plant at the bottom, at the roots, basically, and then once it's now really made a tall trunk, you can, in hot weather, actually water the trunk as well to help cool it down.
The query was, you know, that they're finding that it's becoming a little bit brown on the edges, on the tips rather, on the very tips. Is that indicative of anything else?
Brown tips is usually drought, and as I say, bearing in mind that the air is so dry at the moment because of this heat, so it could be also heat stress.
Okay, so when it's heat stress, you could give them a bit of a shower, and like you said, take a rose, you know, something where you shower them down, you don't drain them, I suppose, you know, give
exactly.
the rain type of effect.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, now, you know, we're talking about all of these things because of the weather. What other things do you think we should be, you know, sort of be mindful of with the type of weather that we have, the current weather patterns that we have?
I think one must just be sure that when you're selecting plants, that you're selecting plants that are more water-wise and they don't need as much water. And if you have to and you want some color, obviously we all like a bit of color, is concentrate your color in strategic spots, so possibly around the entertainment area and at the front door, so that you only have to water there more regularly, that you don't end up having to water the whole garden regularly. And I think it's becoming more and more important to zone your garden so that you have areas of high water needs like your annuals at the front door, and then obviously you'd have to water your veggie garden. And when we come to prioritizing, remember to water your veggies as well. That's also very important. And I still maintain that the lawn must be last in the queue.
Well, I'm not too sure people will be very happy with that one, because, you know, when they come in, it's something that if you've got a piece of green, emerald green coming, it does have a stunning and wow effect. But at the price of so many others, I mean, you could do so, and you could save so many others, I think. And here it is, if you are in an environment where there's waters, you know, difficult to come by, you don't have all of these things, then, well, all of us should be doing, you know, conserving water. But I think when it comes to this space, that we need to understand that what is more important, do you want to have a beautiful lawn or do you want to save the water and so forth? So I think those are some of the things that we, or the option that we have to weigh.
Yes, no, most definitely. And at the end of the day, it's your conscience, you know. Are you going to waste the water on the lawn to have a beautiful lawn, or are you going to concentrate on keeping everything else alive?
Okay, but just on the lawn, I think I've got another question coming through with regards to lawn. if a deep watering once a week, would that be sufficient, or should it, or do you think it should need more than that?
Normally once a week should be sufficient. However, in this heat, it's not going to be.
Okay. So then I'm just trying to now think quickly, what do you do? Okay, so in that case, if it's not going to do, then rather not water.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I'm just like
it all depends on whether people have got access to water, and you know, certain areas really battling with water. So as I say, at the end of the day, it's your conscience how much water you want to use on your lawn. But I don't think once a week in this heat is going to be sufficient.
Now, you know, whilst we're in this particular, and we know that we are in a water-stressed country, and there is sort of restrictions coming in. I mean, I've just seen that the water, Johannesburg Water, just residents to use water sparingly. So whilst we're talking about using sparingly, we've got to remember that lessons that we've learned the last two seasons should still be in the back of our mind.
No, most definitely. And I think people tend to forget so quickly.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, again, we could go back and, you know, make sure that we are bathing, to take a bucket with you, so we have that, you know, the water that you, whilst you're trying to get the water a little bit high in temperatures, you could save that water, take it out a little bit later when it's cool and throw it into your plants and so forth. So I think these are still things, these are lessons that should be for life and shouldn't have been just for a season.
No, most definitely, Smile, yes. And well, I think we can learn a lot from the people in Cape Town.
Oh, yes, I must say, to speaking to them, they become, I beg your pardon, they become, you know, the art that they've learned, they've come to understand what it is, and now I believe everyone's so conscious about water there.
Yes, no, most definitely. I mean, little things in the house that you can do when you're rinsing your vegetables, rinse it over a bigger dish which you can then use to go and water your plants in the garden. Don't just let it run down the drain.
So, you know, there's a lot of other things that we could do, and I think some of these are some of the pointers that, and some of the things that we have learned. And if you have a tap, or you are in the kitchen or something, always have another, you know, container, so that when you do that, the excess water runs into that container late in the day when you're done with your work. You can take some of that water and then into your patio plants, into your indoor plants. So there's so much uses of that water.
No, most definitely.
Well, you know, this will be my time. We're going to go for a break. It's already that time. We're going to go for a break. When we come back, we'll continue with some of the other stuff that we've got that you're going to share with us. Thanks. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome, everyone, on this brilliant morning. I must say, the sizzling day. And we have lots of people complaining about the heat, but we are truly, truly grateful. And whilst we scan the skies, waiting for the rains to fall, we are talking about some of the things that we could be doing and should be doing at our in our gardens at this particular time. And welcome to all of us, whether you're just tuning in via the satellite Islam, Medium Wave 1548, DSTV 826, and audio streaming, perhaps in any other device that you're listening to us on. And we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, and that's Michelle Kutzer, Brand Miller's Nursery. And we're talking about what's to be done with the extreme heats that we have at this moment. And she's shared some wonderful, wonderful insights. I know some of you are around the breakfast table, some already gone out into the garden. Remember to take all the necessary precautions if you are going out, and to ensure that you are well hydrated throughout the day. And we're going to take on your queries, your questions. The number to dial this morning, 854-1548. We've answered some of the questions that I've had coming through in the course of the week. If you'd like to share anything with us, remember once again the number to dial, 854-1548. Michelle, we're now talking about lots of things to be done, and while we do, is it a good time to go out there and to decide what you want to do? If you want to add color in your garden, should we be doing that?
With this heat, no. The seedling growers are going to shoot me, but definitely not with this heat, because small seedlings need so much more water. So I would wait until we've got rain, but you can certainly plan and consider where you're going to be planting your annuals and select your color scheme so long. But if you really have such a desire to plant them, do it, but just make sure that you've got enough water available, especially for the first week or two, because any newly planted seedling or shrub, for that matter, needs a lot more water in them in the beginning stages of their life. But what I'd also like to say, I forgot to mention mulch. I cannot stress the importance of mulch. If you've got a mulch on your beds, your garden beds, that definitely will help conserve water. And, of course, your soil won't dry out as quickly.
You know, if you have a sort of just a thought coming to my mind, you have a lot of growth already. And how would you put in the mulch around it? Because it's so dense and thick. You just throw the compost or the mulch on top of it. What would you do? Because it's not easy to get to the actual root system around it because of the denseness of that plant.
is basically, even if you can just get to around the shrubs or plants, so wherever there's bare soil, if you can try and cover that with some form of a mulch, whether it be shredded newspaper or straw or bark chips, you can even use leaves, autumn leaves. I don't believe in stones because I believe the stones actually draw more heat.
I agree with you, because when you feel those stones, you know, you can feel the intensity of the heat, and it's sometimes hot to touch.
Exactly, yes. So anything soft, leaves, newspaper, lawn clippings, anything like that, you can use as a mulch.
Now, you know, the other thing that would be ideal at this time, I'm sure you would concur with me, is succulents, and, you know, looking at the variety of succulents that you can, you know, plant, because I'm sure lots of it looking stunning. And if you are looking for an alternative plant, maybe you should visit some of the succulent sections.
No, most definitely, and they're becoming so popular and trendy, and there's so many shapes and sizes and colors that one can really create a stunning garden with succulents. Yeah.
And then, you know, what about the fascias?
Fascias also, they also form part of the succulents. They more sort of a ground cover, whereas the others form more rosettes or taller plants.
Now, the fascia, would that give us some, you know, I've seen some of the beautiful colors coming through. Tell us about those colors that you get in that range.
And the fascias is basically almost in all colors, the traditional perennial fascia. That you get in white and in yellow and orange and purples and pink. Some of them are taller varieties, especially the purple, and the others tend to be flat. And then you also get what they call the summer fascia, which would be your portulaca, which has got multicolored flowers. It's whites, pinks, purples, reds, and oranges. And they form more of a flower that looks almost like a rose. Whereas in winter, your mesum or your bokvai fascia, that has more of a daisy flower, but that's more for the winter.
Well, now, if you wanted something that is perennial, which one would you go for, the portulaca, or would you go for the traditional fascia?
The traditional fascia is definitely perennial, whereas the portulaca in frosty areas dies in winter, so then it's considered more a summer annual.
Again, when you go into a garden center, do you just ask for something like a fascia or portulaca? Would you just be, how would you be able to distinguish the difference?
Generally, your fascia would be in a bag or in a pot, whereas your portulaca would be in amongst the seedlings.
Okay, so that's perhaps one of the indicators of how, you know, to choose. Okay, now we need to just chat with, you know, people have now started vegetable garden and herb gardens, and those are also, you know, being stressed out. What should we be doing this time with those particular plants? You know, they bought them early spring, and it's already now about 6 weeks into summer. And we've had, you know, the topsy-turvy weather. We had them very hot, and we had cold, and then we had wind, and now we have the extremities of the heat. How do they cope, and what would we be doing with the veggies and the herbs?
You need to keep your eye on the herbs, particularly things like rocket and basil and coriander, to make sure that they don't flower, because if they flower, they go to seed so quickly. So continuously remove the flowers to make sure that you prolong their season. And you can still plant veggies now to do sort of a follow-up, so that you extend your harvest, basically, if you do a follow-up. And those that are planting from seed, when you plant seed, never plant the whole packet at once. Plant it and then wait a week or two and plant again, and that way you can extend your season. Obviously, the herbs and veggies that are in pots, you could possibly consider moving to a spot where they don't get full sun, but where they get at least half a day sun, and that way they'll also retain the bit of moisture that they've got in the pots, and make sure that you mulch them very well.
So, you know, you're talking about them bolting. So certain plants would, and I think that would happen also for the lettuce if you don't watch them. You know, they suddenly bolt and you have the flowers coming on them. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, I've got a query coming through before we continue with that. I live in Port Elizabeth, and it's not as hot as it is as you are discussing. My curry tea leaf is bare. How do I look after it? I suppose once you get some leaves on it again, what do you think she should be doing?
She can give it something like a Seagrow or Nitrosol, which is I like to call it a green plant food. It encourages leaves. So if she gave that to it, that would certainly encourage it to make leaves again.
Okay, so it would need a feeding regimen. Is that what it is?
Correct, yes. Something with a high nitrogen content. And why I'm recommending Nitrosol or Seagrow is they liquid food, so they can't burn because you've mixed them with water.
And you just throw... I'm just trying to think, so you mix that into water and then you throw it onto, and then you, once it's diluted, you throw it into the plant.
You pour it on the soil around the plant, correct, yes. But while we're talking about fertilizers, those that are feeding their plants at the moment, because what happens with this excessive heat, we're all watering more, with the result the food is being washed out, so we need to replenish the food. And just be mindful, those that are using a granular fertilizer, that you have to water after you've put the fertilizer down. And if you don't water enough, it burns. Therefore, a liquid type is much better at this time of the year when we have these high temperatures, or something, if I may mention names, like multi-feed or multi-sol, which is more in a crystal form, which you dilute in water. So in other words, any fertilizer that gets diluted in water is definitely a better option at this time of the year with these heat waves we're having, as opposed to a granular one.
Someone's got a question here. Yeah, I've got both superphosphate and bone meal, and by mistake I've thrown both of them onto my plants. What should I be doing?
You shouldn't use both, the one or the other. It's sort of overkill. They both do the same thing. They both root developers. So there's not really much you can do if you've already put it on. But just remember, in future, it's either the one or the other.
Well, somebody said, and just that was just by the way, someone said to me about bone meal, rather use it on your fruit and veg and your superphosphate, perhaps on your aesthetic and your beauty plants if you want to use, if you have both of them.
That's a very good idea, yes, because bone meal is certainly very good for the veggies, particularly the tomatoes are very fond of it.
Again, the question about, yes, I'm just trying to look at it, with regards to, yes, you know, I've got a lot of, well, I suppose again with the curry leaf, I think, and I've got lots of the salicylia. I want to get rid of it, but I want to do it naturally. I do not want to destroy the environment. What could I do?
I don't know of any natural remedy for salicylia.
Okay. Well, is there any companion plant, perhaps? Somebody said once to us that you could use the garlic, you know, the tulbagha, and perhaps put some mint around it, and maybe the intensity of the smell perhaps would deter it. I'm not sure if that would be a good idea.
You can certainly try that in your veggie garden and herb garden, but whether it will work for salicylia, I'm not sure. I know lots of people use nasturtiums around their veggies as a trap crop, so to lure the aphids away from the cabbage, they would then use nasturtiums so that they rather go there. They also use marigolds because that's got a very strong scent, very much like kakibos, which is the same family, and that definitely does deter some of the insects, as does the mint, as you mentioned, and something like pennyroyal. And for the fruit trees, one can consider tansy, which makes a lovely plant of about a meter high with yellow flowers, and that also helps for fruit fly, and often it helps to lure the beetles away from things like the spinach, where they normally chomp all the leaves.
Just explain to us what is a salicylia. You know, the question comes up repeatedly almost in every program. What is salicylia, and what, you know, is it, whilst it's an insect, what happens, what's its pattern like? Why does it, and why does it attack only certain plants? And it does the citrus, it does the curry leaves. Why does it attack certain plants?
That's right. Any insect seems to favor particular plants, like aphids love roses and they love cabbage more than any of the other veggies. And now the same thing, some plants seem to be more susceptible to the salicylia. It's caused by an insect, and what actually happens, it makes these little blisters on the leaves, which become very unsightly on the leaves.
So it's not only those little rays or bumps or something, that's not the insect's cell in there, it's just the sting.
No, that's sort of the leftover, the damage after the insect, shall I say. It's the damage that the insect caused.
Have you been able to, you know, I look at, sort of, I'm trying for myself. Do you know what it looks like?
It's a tiny little insect.
So it's tiny, so to make all this, you need thousands of them.
Yes.
Okay, that's just an enlightened note. Now, you know, whilst we're talking about insects, we're talking about hochas, and this is a beautiful weather for them. They thrive in this weather. Is that right?
For sure. Yes, for sure. They love the heat.
And so, you know, whilst, you know, I'm really an advocate where we don't want to kill all of them off, but we want to maintain the natural balance. What do we do? What do we do attract, you know, so whilst there's an insect or a hocha, we also have another insect or hocha that could repel that. Tell us about some of those.
Yes, no, most definitely. Obviously, the best way is to not spray at all, because if you do that, eventually you'll get a balance in your own garden, because, for example, the ladybirds will eat the aphids, and, of course, things like your lizards will eat the ants. even spiders. I know people don't like spiders. I don't either. But spiders also consume many insects. So definitely by not spraying, you will encourage more sort of life into your garden, and you'll eventually reach a balance. But if you have to, in some instances, the infestation is so bad that you have to spray. And if you do have to spray, rather buy a specific poison which is made, let's say for example you've got a problem with ants, rather buy something that kills only ants as opposed to buying a product that's a broad spectrum that kills ants and aphids and because that way you're killing everything. So try to not spray at all, and as I say, if you do, then make sure the ones you buy are more specific, not broad spectrum. And of course, you could consider using many of the herbs like tansy and southern wood and making your own insect spray with that. But you're basically making a tea from it and then use that to spray your plants. And you could even take a spray bottle with just water and try and spray the aphids off your roses.
Thank you very much for that. And the number to dial this morning, 854-1540. If any queries, any calls that you like, any information you'd like to share, would like information on. The number again, 854-1540. I've got a question that's come through. I have a gardenia plant. It's not performing well. The leaves are turning yellow. How can I look after it?
Often gardenias become yellow because they actually have a shortage of food, and it's usually a shortage of magnesium or iron. So the best product to use is a product called Chelmix, which contains all the trace elements, because usually it's a trace element shortage, and if you mix that in water and pour it on, it should then recover, and you'll see that the new leaves will probably be a much better, darker green color.
So it's called Chelmix, and you could get that, and the quantities, do you have to buy a large quantity, or can you get it in smaller ones?
It's in a 200 ml and I think a litre bottle.
Okay, so you take the Chelmix, and then the instructions are on it.
Correct, yes. And as I say, it's basically a plant tonic, if I can put it that way, because it contains just trace elements which a lot of the other fertilizers don't have in.
Okay, so it's called Chelmix. Thank you very much for that. And I've got a question here with regards to, I've been told I could use tea bags in my garden. I've now started collecting them. On which plants could I use them, and when should I be using them?
A lot of people believe in tea bags. I've never tried it myself, but I believe particularly the acid-loving plants like the azaleas and the camellias, they seem to enjoy the tea bags very much.
Yes, you know, somebody said to us last week, any plant that ends with an A would need an acid-loving, so gardenias, azaleas, any of that. Thank you very much. I've got a caller coming in. Let's just take that and we can continue. Hello, assalamu alaikum. Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam.
Please go ahead.
I just want to find out, I planted a guava tree and a mango tree. What do I feed it with?
Guava tree and a mango tree. And did you plant it from seed, or you get a plant?
I got a plant.
You got a plant and you want to just check. And which area are you living in?
Vereeniging.
Vereeniging. Okay, we'll just check.
And another question is, the rose trees, I got the staining ones. How do I feed those with? What do I...
Okay, you can listen off air.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Assalamualaikum.
Walaikum salam. There's two questions. It's your area, Michelle.
Yes.
It's in your area. They're talking about guavas and mango trees in the Vereeniging area. You definitely know the climate. And how should they go about with that?
Your best food would be a 315, because your last number is potassium, and your potassium encourages fruit and flowering, so it would be ideal for the fruit trees. So that would definitely be the right one to use, and the roses as well. 315 once a month.
Okay, and she was talking about standing, the standards. What was the could she use the same feed?
The standard roses, also 315 would be the best, but not against the stem. That is what one wants to remember when you're feeding. You never feed against the stem. You always feed away from the stem and water it in. And obviously, if it's a bigger tree where the drip line is, which is where the branches are, that's where the feeding roots are. So it's important never to put the food right next to the branches. Not next to the main stem, at least.
Thank you very much. I think we've got another call online. Let's take that one. Assalamu alaikum. Please go ahead.
Hello, alaikum assalam.
Go ahead with your question.
I want to know, I've got roses in my garden, and on either side of the entrance of the house, I've got red on the red roses planted, and I see these are the only ones that are getting a bit frail. It's getting off color, and some of them are a bit red. The other ones are just gone off color. Why is that? Is there some deficiency or something like that with that? Or is it too much on the corner, or is it against the wall, near the wall? That could be the problem?
Is this newly planted roses, or have they been old roses that have been there for a while? These roses, are they newly planted, or have they been established roses? Have they been there for some time?
No, it's for some time. It's a couple of years now.
And it's the first time you're noticing this?
Yeah, but I've got quite a bit of the other roses are okay. But I just noticed the other day that one of my pink roses also are getting a little bit off color. Is it because of the heat?
Okay, let's ask Michelle, and you're listening off air. Is that fine?
Yes. I would say it's quite possible because of the heat. Because I find even if you plant roses in different parts of the country, like a rose in Pretoria will look different to here because they're so much warmer there. So I definitely think it could have something to do with the heat, especially if they've been in the garden for a long time and now all of a sudden they're sort of not performing and not giving their full color. It's quite possible that it's due to the heat.
So is there anything you should be doing, or is there a concern about it? Because I think he's, from what I do gather, he's got a number of roses in his gardens, and these just look off-color. So trying to make sure that all of them are in excellent condition. Is there something you could be doing?
Not really with this heat. Just make sure that you give them sufficient water as much as you can give them, and I'm sure once the weather improves, they'll also improve.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Hello, is there another query? Hello? I think we've lost that caller. Okay, the number to dial 854-1544. We've got just a couple of minutes before we conclude this morning's program. Now, you know, Michelle, we've been talking about so many things, and I'm not too sure. Do you think it's still time for us to be, you know, whilst you talk about food security, we're so high on everyone's agenda, and when you hear things coming in, you know, of the type of pesticides and insecticides, so people wanting to grow more of their own foods and so forth, what else, you know, tell us about some of the things that they should be doing with regards to food security. Whilst we know that the heat is there, the intensity is there, but the people still wanting to grow, what should they be doing?
No, most definitely. I think lots of people don't know that you can grow a lot of veggies in containers. So even people that live in smaller places could still have some fruit and some veggies, particularly things like tomatoes and brinjals and peppers and chilies, because one plant produces so much. So you really don't need a lot of space, and a 35-centimeter pot can be big enough for one chili plant to produce thousands of chilies off it, and brinjals and tomatoes are the same thing. So definitely in containers, and as I say, they need at least half a day's sun. So I wouldn't recommend putting them in full sun, particularly now with this heat wave, but one can certainly do that. Even lettuce one can do in containers, but just bear in mind that your leaf veggies require a lot more water, so that you need to bear in mind as well. And they can also handle a little bit more shade than your things like your tomatoes and your brinjals, which would need more sun to ripen.
When I just want you to just tell us a little bit, because we're running out of time. It's called the perfect perennial, and that is the daylily. Tell us something about the daylily, and whilst it's a perennial, it would do well in a water-stressed garden. Is that correct?
Most definitely, yes. Daylilies are water-wise, and they are perennial. They're evergreen perennials. They reach about between 5 and 600 millimeters in height, look very much like a flax with lots of leaves, and then they produce these beautiful lily-like flowers, which only last a day, hence the name a daylily. But they're really nice in the garden, and they just become more and more, and the clumps just become bigger and bigger. And they can grow in full sun or half shade.
And I was also told that the plant, not the plant, but I believe that the flower is edible.
I believe so, yes. I don't know if I would eat them, but I do believe that they are edible, like things like marigolds and nasturtiums too, but I do believe they are edible, yes.
Well, I know you. I think you understand. Perhaps we all like that, you know. Flowers are for flowers and should be on the in a vase and not in the pot, I suppose.
Yes.
Well, that brings us to the end of another wonderful, wonderful program. Just tell us quickly, whereabouts are you situated?
We're on the northern side of town, so about 5 k's from Roshni. As you come into town, the second robot right, and we're down that road.
And what do you think people should be coming out to look out for if they're wanting to buy?
Definitely food. Everybody's buying food. I've got specials on figs and some blueberries, and I've got lots of strawberries, lots of different varieties of strawberries. I have got tomatoes and brinzels and all the veggies. And those that are wanting color, there's things like geraniums, which can handle the heat. There's petunias, there's verbenas, there's gazanias. So, yes, there are seedlings that one can plant that definitely don't require nearly as much water as others do.
What about the sunskin lemon and lime? Is that available, or is that not the right time to be looking for these plants?
No, you can plant citrus at this time of the year as well, yes. And they do particularly well in large containers as well.
I remember in a large container, just quickly the dimensions.
I would say at least 800 millimeters in diameter and probably about 800 to 900 millimeters in height.
Okay, that brings us to the end of another wonderful, wonderful program. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed being with you this morning, and we'll chat in the future. You take care. Thanks.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Ismail. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Staff. Bye-bye. And that was, she was sharing such wonderful, wonderful information with us this morning. And I see more. I think Fraser is waiting in the wings to take us to the 9 o'clock news. It's all from us until we meet again. Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.